Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. And excuse me. I told Richard before the show that my throat was all garbagey. I did something evil last night. Evil for me. I ate a pizza with double cheese. And now I can't talk and I'm sneezing like crazy. So thank you for your patience, all of you, and thank you for being here on this weekend. We try to bring you information about how to make your life a little better, a little easier, a little less stressed, and we are always happy with our guests who try to follow suit with what is happening. So I'm going to let Richard introduce our guest because Jack's been on the show before, there is a new project coming up with Jack Tips, and I don't know enough about it. I'll just say we are sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health. Our most recent projects have been MS, and we'll have a database about that soon. And we are doing a project about the truths and myths of cancer with some cancer experts, so we'll have that information out. We do have a couple of new articles. We just did a new article on Bill Cosby and what's going on with him and why he did what he did. It's in his vocal print, and we did this from some of his interviews. So that's under In the News, I believe, on our Sound Health Options site. We are not simultaneously broadcasting. We are only on Blog Talk Radio on our Sunday show. We will be broadcasting dual video and audio on our Tuesday show. So I don't know who the guest is for that yet, but we'll probably get there. Richard, I don't have any announcements. I just have a couple comments this morning.
I don't really have any announcements because I want to save the time. I know that we could fill hours with Jack, so I have no announcements. But I will remind people, because this is going to be one of those shows you're going to want to listen to again, I bet, because he's just filled with so much information about microbiome and health and the relationship between, well, everything. Microbiome and everything. Although I must say one of my favorites is our relationship to the Earth, to Mother Earth, and to the microbiome is amazing as well. But I will remind people that you can find this show about 15 minutes after we end it by going to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Radio Archives. And the player on that page will have the last five shows we did. And this should be there about, like I say, about 10 to 15 minutes after we end the show. And you can also find the show at iTunes and Pocket Cast and Stitcher. Stitcher is a great cross-platform app, meaning it works on all. You can use it on your computer. You can use it on your phone, whatever platform you're on. I like Pocket Cast a lot. And you can go to any of those and search for Sherry Edwards and now find over 500 shows. Isn't that mind-boggling? That alone is mind-boggling. 500 shows. Wow. And this is one of those shows that we're going to want to listen to again. I can just tell. And you had a couple of comments, Sherry?
Yeah, I wanted to add to what you said. We do this show for our audience, for information for them. And we also do a lot of demonstrations of our databases and how people can use that. And there is a guest section to our Sound Health portal where people can go in and leave a 30-second sample of their voice and get a report on the spot of their nutrition and their muscle status. So those have been up like forever. And the new ones that we have up is anybody who has fibromyalgia, what is the purpose or how are they getting that? And lipodemia, and the one we're going to be putting up this week is neuroplasticity, so what your brain needs from you. So we try to follow up with what we have on the shows with what people can have access to on the portal. Yes, I had a couple of just incredible announcements, and it's really a bit of a soapbox. When I grew up on the farm, if somebody came to us, a neighbor or whatever, came to us and asked for something, it was a last resort. They had no other way of providing. You didn't ask unless you really, really need it. And people have sent me two things over this weekend that I find absolutely incredible. University of Michigan students want wood paneling removed from the campus because they find it racist. Does that just blow your mind? How
wow.
is wood paneling racist? Are people just in this mood to ask to see what they can get? Well, remove all the bricks and mortar and let's just have outside classes. I mean, where is this coming from? Students insist the paneling is racist. And so to improve student life, these people, this group, wants the paneling removed. Okay, here's another one that is just equally off the wall. Illegal students demand that the university, in Columbia, subsidize their health care and housing so they don't have to pay for it, because that's in line with what was promised to them, that they could have free health care and free schooling and free housing. This is at Columbia. There's not even any comment that comes so close to understanding where this next level, this next generation is coming from. I would be suspicious if somebody wanted to give me something that I didn't have to work for. But that was sent to me from people who said this is something that they would like us to at least be aware of for the kinds of people who watch our show, because they thought it was just absolutely incredible that this was happening. Okay,
I don't know. I think it's an interesting, I don't know what. It seems like it's an indicator of so many things going on now in the political system, in the sense of, you know, we have one end that are, you know, it seems to be about being over-entitled in some odd way. We have one end that think that all the money should go to the uber wealthy, and we have the other end that's flaming out the other direction, which in an odd way is a great lead in to Jack Tipps, because he really talks about our relationship to the earth and our microbiome. It seems like both ends are out of relationship to the earth. Everybody wants theirs and nobody cares about everybody else. And that's such a weird, I think it's an odd state to be. But I think it's a curious and great lead in to Jack. Jack Tipps, PhD and CCN, The Wellness Whiz, says, health is so much more than an absence of symptoms. It is a dynamic state of being, vibrant energy, clear thoughts, enlightened insights, and accordant purpose with life itself. It is the birthright of every person, and to realize it, one must simply be in accord with life's basic health principles. Wellness Whiz is dedicated to sharing natural health insights so you can live in the very best of health and experience the very best life. Wellness Whiz, Jack Tipps, has dedicated his career to advancing the applications of natural health practices and bringing to bear the latest research in his own clinic, as well as passing on his vast knowledge to others. His teaching style has been honed to cut through the scientific chatter to the true essence of the latest natural health research. As a natural health consultant, Jack has touched the lives of thousands of people with his keen insights and foundational belief that he stands in service to the body's innate vitality from which optimal health originates. Jack joins us today to discuss the life-changing potential of a happy microbiome and the reduction of age-related muscle loss. Good morning, Dr. Jack.
Hey, good morning, you guys. What a pleasure to get to chat with everyone this morning. Thank you so much.
This is going to be a roller coaster ride. I always know when we're this is going to be fun as always. I have an I'll put this in the show notes. We did a show back in January of 2015 with Jack, which I think is a great foundational show to where we're going to go today. I'm going to do a little bit of history, but we're going to kind of skip over it like a stone on the water, because I really want to get into talking about age-related muscle loss. Since I'm in that category, I'm really curious, you know, wondering about that. But I do have to ask, what or when was your aha moment that microbiome was the foundation of really so much of who we are?
You know, I guess the, you know, it's been part and parcel of the natural health movement when modern medicine was denying leaky gut and denying all of this, the symptoms via the GI tract. Then the natural health people carried it forward. Now, as of about 2 years ago, medicine has decided there is leaky gut, and it's now their discovery of called intestinal permeability, as more and more of this information has been breaking. So in natural health, we've always kept an eye on the fact that good digestion is necessary for good health. By the way that our bodies convert the earth elements, you know, the food, the vegetables, the minerals from the soil, all of that, we convert non-self into self, and it starts in the gut microbiome, because the intestinal bacteria are actually our intermediaries with our food. We don't eat food and just suddenly it appears in our bloodstream as health molecules. Those molecules have to pass through the gut microbiome. And the gut microbiome makes neurotransmitters and signaling molecules and information molecules that's communicated to the brain and to the body, through the nervous system as well as through the bloodstream. And so the interest has always been there, but it seems like about 5 years ago, science just started popping, and a lot of the science was not from the United States, but it just started popping that the gut microbiome has everything to do with a person's set point of inflammation. That ties into every inflammatory disease, you know, rheumatoid arthritis and diabetes and everything that runs from this relationship of the immune system being hyperactive and going into autoimmune diseases, attacking the thyroid. The roots of that have a strong correlation to the health of the GI tract tissue. And so science just kept pouring out the link between the gut microbiome and the heart, the link between the gut microbiome and glucose metabolism, the gut-brain connection, and then it was the brain-gut connection and the bidirectional communications. And all of a sudden, it just, you know, lands right back in Hippocrates' lap, you know, many thousands of years ago, that all disease begins in the stomach. That was sort of the translation out of the Greek, all disease begins in the gut, kind of a thing. And lo and behold, how profound is that statement that we've all hung our hats on? That's a cliche statement, along with Thomas Edison's, the doctor of the future will give no medicines, but will, you know, encourage people to have a good diet and things like that, that we embrace. Well, here it is, all the way back to the father of natural medicine, Hippocrates himself. And here it comes. The gut is all important. So, you know, even more funny than they used to say, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, you know, which was sort of a stereotypic statement telling you know, women to cook something good for the man. But beyond stereotypes and our cultural changes, the whole concept is so much that entrance into our health comes from the gut microbiome. So naturally, in looking for solutions, why are we all struggling with degenerative diseases that were founded in the inflammation? I think it was that cover of Time magazine, I think it was 2004, February, it said, "Inflammation, the silent killer." And what they were talking about is, no, it's not all this other stuff. It's the body's own immune system and inflammation that's driving heart disease, driving diabetes, driving Alzheimer's, driving high blood pressure. And so with this whole syndrome X or metabolic syndrome getting wrapped up, including cancer, all of this is being driven by an immune system that's just being forced to keep pecking away at the cell membranes where the inflammation is silently killing us. And then that steers us back to our holistic natural health model that we're an agitated society, we're a fearful society. If you disagree, we don't need to argue too much there. As you say, look around. Pay attention to the state of humanity, you know, that we're struggling with the air pollution, the land pollution, the water pollution. Our bodies are agitated and activated, and a lot of this is turning back on us. And now we get to the story of the gut microbiome, which we have basically tried to eradicate for the last 100 years via taking broad-spectrum antibiotics, you know, chlorine and fluoride in the water system, the pesticides in foods. So much of what we've done has been what they teach us on TV. You got to kill that bacteria in your mouth. The whole thing of antibiotics saving lives when someone's being threatened by a cholera or a pneumonia, and these antibiotics wiping out. So science has been since Lister discovered Listerine. I'm just kidding there, Dr. Lister, one of the early antimicrobials coming right on the heels of Louis Pasteur, who said we got to kill the bugs. Except, you know, as we know the fun story, Louis Pasteur's deathbed, you know, supposedly he said that his rival Beecham was right, that it's all about your own personal internal terrain. It's about your terrain. It's not about the bacteria. Well, we know that even more today because we've watched the mutation of bacteria into superbugs, the Staphylococcus aureus that can't be even controlled with vancomycin. And this escalating arms race has not only gone on globally in political arenas, but it's gone on within our bodies, the same behavior. The bugs can adapt better. They can adapt faster, and they quorum sense those antibiotics, and they build resistance. And when they come back, they're mad. And that's when we get more virulent strains. And so this whole Cold War, Hot War flip-flop that's been going on for now 100 years with our guts is finally now being understood, that the good bacteria keep the bad bacteria in check. The good bacteria keep your brain healthy and happy. The good bacteria make your food into usable nutrients. Your good bacteria are regulating every system of your body. On a more lighthearted note, science even discovered that the bacteria that inhabit your skin will change and release, let's say, the pheromones. And so the person who's the love of your life was chosen, most likely, by your bacteria. As you see that person of instant animal magnetism and attraction, your perspiration goes into effect and releases let's just say a smell. And this is coming from the bacteria. Just like the smell of rain is really bacteria in the soil releasing when the rain hits the dry earth, the body releases. And then the microbes are doing one job for you there. they're matching up the immune system of the one you think you might love or seek after. And if your genetics are too close, you will not get the oxytocin, the endorphin release that we associate with love. And so that's where nature has an admonishment against incest, if we want to get that way, that close relative's genetics would be too close to yours, and you would be immunologically inferior and susceptible to dying. And so nature wants to reach out for biodiversity. So, hey, right there, as far as global situations, there's a strong case, whether it's agriculture or humanity, biodiversity is established very well in nature. Just like this country was established on the being the melting pot of the world, there's a brilliance in that from nature. So anyway, these bacteria are weighing the DNA, the genetic makeup of the immune system. And as long as you're diverse and there's things to gain, the bacteria facilitate the release of oxytocin. And that starts the romance. And so when we realize that, doggone, these little bugs are controlling our love life, they control when a baby should be weaned. You know, it's not as the mom needs to go back to the workforce. It's, you know, coming out of World War II, that was important. But it's really the bacteria. The bacteria determine when the secondary sex characteristics, called menarche, and puberty, that these processes are all tied in to the gut microbiome's regulation of metabolism and brain awareness. So I know I've been talking a lot, and I tell you, it just gets running, but I thought we might kind of enjoy hearing the profound influence that the microbes have. And so what we've been doing for 20 years in natural health, or 30 years, we give probiotics, and sometimes we give fibers, and those are as dietary supplements. As we've learned more now, we realize that we have to take our therapies way beyond that, that the probiotic species that are in a capsule are not necessarily those that are right for our body, but our bodies can mutate them. Our immune system can get involved, and we're looking at how do we repair the terrible damage to our gut microbiome from antibiotics, and certainly the antibiotics that are in commercial meat today and commercial farmed fish. We're picking up antibiotics that are constantly insulting the good guys in our tummies, and it starts to make them go bad. So now that we realize that we've had this scorched earth campaign against our tummies for 100 years, science is finally saying, well, wait a minute, maybe we need to be more judicious with antibiotics. Maybe we need to look at how does a person reestablish their innate gut microbiome? Because nature rewards biodiversity in the gut. That's your strength. That's your immunity. And, yeah, there will be familial traits.
Nature is such an amazing example of how, you know, synergism works. I mean, it really...
If we paid attention to nature, we'd have our answers.
We'd have
our
answers.
We might even Middle East crises
exactly.
Perpetually. But
you've used a really good phrase. I've heard you use a really good phrase in regarding the microbiome, which I'd like you to talk about just a little bit, is that good fences make good neighbors. Could you talk about that part about the microbiome, that we have these bacteria, which I think if when Disney was making films about Mr. Hemoglobin, if they'd made a film about, you know, an animated film about Mr. Bacteria as not being such a ne'er-do-well, bacteria's always been sort of animated as being in a trench coat and being one of those ne'er-do-well evil characters with a bomb in his pocket, that we actually have a relationship, our bodies have a really strong relationship with bacteria. And your phrase about good fences make good neighbors, talk about that rapport that we have or can have.
Right. So humanity has evolved in this world of microbes, which outnumber us, you know, 100 to 1. For each one of our cells, there's 100 species out there, and so forth. And so one of our big challenges to survive on Earth, It's not just food, clothing, and shelter. It's our relationship with the microbes that would recognize our bodies as having a great temperature, a great moistness, a great food environment. In fact, we're the land of milk and honey for the microbial species. So what evolved in nature was that we harnessed the good bacteria. So if we look at how our cells make energy, ATP, adenosine triphosphate, the energy of life, those are foreign DNA historic bacteria. And there might be 4,000 to 6,000 of them inside one of your cells. And their job there now, as we've harnessed their power, is they make ATP energy. So they conduct the beta oxidation, the Krebs cycle, those two processes to make us the energy that keeps us alive. So bacteria and human beings, number one, we couldn't have life without them. Number two, we're using them in our gut, and they're using us in a symbiotic relationship. We provide the host environment. They, the good guys, in turn, the ones our immune system allow, according to our genetics, those good guys will now beat up on the bad guys. So every time you hear of a Staph aureus or a Clostridia or a Helicobacter pylori species that have gone rogue, we have good bacteria that are the best line of defense against them that will corral them and put them, even if they keep them, will put them to good use. So anyway, the good fences refers to the intestinal lining, the epithelial cells that are going to be in our lining the gut, and 70% of our immune system is in our gut. So anytime we need to look at the immune system, well, the big picture is in the gut. So the good bacteria are our staunch allies and our frontline immune system. But, you know, these good guys don't belong inside our body. And so when a person has leaky gut, it's even the good guys that can rile up and damage the immune system or cause the immune system to go autoimmune because they're in the place where they don't want to be. The skin is a barrier against the hostile external world, and the skin has a variety of microbiomes all over it that are predominantly to keep the bad guys away and to see that there's a good pH and functioning of the skin. So we have literally live in a bubble, both internally, which is in contact with the external world when we eat or breathe, and externally on the skin, the nasal mucosa, the vaginal mucosa, all over the body, there's microbiomes, and in the lungs. And so I think just a real quick point there, we hear now as the science advances into the public domain, people are aware of biofilms. And I just wanted to say while we're still treating biofilms as bad, we want good biofilms. A good biofilm would be the good plaque that's smooth and sweet and thin and clear that should be on your teeth to protect your teeth from the bad guys. So now we see we have good, bad. We've labeled everything mostly incorrectly, and we don't need to go in with a mouthwash and try to kill all the bacteria in the mouth because the good guys are there to take care of the sweetness of our breath, the lack of inflammation to the gums, and by golly, they sit right there on the back of the tongue and make nitric oxide out of a lettuce leaf. So that your body can maintain proper blood pressure, reproduce, and all the things that nitric oxide does, the iNOS and eNOS systems within the cells. So anyway, that's what good fences would make good neighbors, is we each have our role. We have disrespected the role of our neighbors. And really, when we look, that's the bacteria. And when we really look at it, we would have to say that we're on literally a 50-50 partnership. We're a marriage with these microbes, except that the human being is more mobile and has the intelligence, and therefore the human being claims dominion over all the animals and so forth. And we somehow retain one half of 1% of self-destiny when we realize that the microbes are a huge, huge factor in our health and literally the destiny of our lives.
Wow. Bacteria is ally. What a radical concept. Instead of, as I say, that Disney sort of, I'm of that Disney generation, where really bacteria has always been, you know, anytime you hear the word bacteria, I bet if we went out on like Jay Leno, went out on the street and put a microphone in front of people's face and asked them what do they think about bacteria, I bet 9 out of 10 people are going to say bad, evil, ne'er-do-wells, out to get
us. Yeah, there's some real bad guys out there, and that's what science has had to focus on because they go into diseases and death. And so that's why suddenly it's an old frame of mind. I don't want to do it politically. I'm trying to think of a more benign example, but it's like sometimes people say the only good snake's a dead snake. And then they, you know, while they're trying to worry about the rattlesnake that might bother the three-year-old in the backyard, they're also maybe getting rid of the garden snake and the ones that would control the rats. And, you know, we now understand better, thanks to science, the balance of nature, and that all these things, although I secretly try to ignore that rule and everything in an ecological niche and wish to heck that we could somehow get along without mosquitoes, but that's just partly a joke there. But because another species could pollinate, you know, such as bees or something, if we weren't killing them with the glyphosate, the Roundup side and so forth. But you get the idea that now we're trying to understand there's a balance of nature, and instead of kill, 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 which has been the role of every toothpaste and mouthwash and antibiotic and, you know, chlorine and fluoride in the water and, you know, overcooking of food and even nuclear radiation of foods and spices and all the things and foolishness that science has tried to do on the you know, gosh, if we could just kill every bacteria, nobody would get pneumonia, except for viral pneumonia. But anyway, the point there is now we realize we can't defeat these bacteria because they are part of the balance of nature. And if we did defeat them all, nature's balance would become unraveled and it would probably result in the death of everything. So we have to learn a new modality, a new way of looking at life in the world, and it changes us from being, you know, kind of terrorist bombers of everything to now, why don't we support, why don't we nurture the good behaviors, why don't we reward the good behaviors for the bacteria and take some fermented foods in? Why don't we reward good bacteria and have the prebiotic fibers? And so now we can cultivate the good guys and get a unlevel playing field toward the good guys and let them run the show, and then we're free to do what we want to do. So it's just a matter of using our resources now, and there's so many, many people trying to correct all the damage of the past, and we really have to employ some new thinking based on the latest science about the contest that goes on between the bacteria and how to get our tummies back to the way they would have, could have, should have been shortly after birth, where the microbiome has, the mom's microbiome has seeded the infant's body with the proper species and immune signals to develop the proper species as they go through life. So bottom line, the bacteria are our friends, they're our allies, we you know, we can't live without them, and if we can let them perform according to nature's plan, now after hundreds of thousands of years of relationships with things like H. pylori and some of these species, the E. coli, that now our bodies know and our immune systems know how to get along, how to build the good, and we should be much stronger, happier, healthy individuals because of it, if only we haven't embraced about, you know, 100 different ways to kill bacteria all around us.
Well, and I think that an interesting sort of spin I knew it was going to become a big deal when I saw some of the, I won't name the big brand, but one of the, you know, a number of the yogurt companies. And yogurt is a great food, unpasteurized, whole, real, you know, yogurt is amazing, an amazing nutrient. And when I saw the major ad campaigns coming out about, you know, this special yogurt that, like, just eat this yogurt every day and you'll be great. You know, when you see industry moving toward wanting to make a product for something, that it's become a deal. And I mean that the deal is the understanding that our immune system is based on our gut, and they're trying to, of course, make money off of that by saying, here's this magic pill, take that. Versus the idea of,
well, that's the sad thing, I think, a lot about the money-making industry, when that's the number one god of a business.
Yeah.
And mostly it's, you know, you'll read it right in the incorporation papers.
Yeah.
It's all about making the bucks. So in the yogurt industry, they took the spoiled milk, the milk that was now a waste product, and now that's what they ferment, and then frequently they kill the bacteria. They want it pasteurized, so there's not living bacteria being shipped around. And then they put a bunch of sugar in the bottom in a form of some kind of compote. So we learned early on that the yogurt had all the problems of milk, meaning pesticides, growth hormones, things like that, a disturbed cow living an unnatural life and pumped up with antibiotics and growth factors. That milk was not healthy to begin with. When it started to spoil, they turn it into yogurt. They kill everything in it so they can have a sterile product and put some sugar in it and then tell you this is good for your body. And the only thing good in that kind of yogurt is some of the dead bacterial DNA that your body might pick up and be able to get some neurosignaling from as it digests the yogurt. So you're so right to say, well, when we talk yogurt, we want, you know, grass-fed, organic, pasture-raised milk, and then if you want a milk yogurt, and then have the good species just thriving in it, and when we eat the milk, we get those lactobacillus going down the pipe, and then they will make things that literally feed the colon cells called colocytes, and it's going to make the acetate and the propionate and so forth that those cells need. And we realize now we're seeding our digestive tracts with, you know, hopefully trillions of these good guys that will create lactic acid, which is good in the GI tract, that then sets off the cascade of all good health. And then a lot of these lactose species will go in and they'll kill the bad guys and do all the good things that nature intended. So you might remember some of the early research that started the yogurt craze. This is back in the 60s, was that the countries in the Balkans, in some of the upper Swiss areas, and then there was a fermented milk out of the South America, out of the Andes. And these fermented milk products, like in Hunzaland and stuff like that, were all being touted as elixirs and the miracles of life because they saw the people that ate them were healthier and happier. And I'm serious about the happy, because
yep.
They found a lot of these cultures had no need for police, that people knew how to live in harmony together. Of course, that doesn't last long in the modern world, but that's where that came from. And just look at how science has perverted a health food for a buck and actually giving pablum to people that doesn't make a darn bit of difference. If anything, it stimulates a milk allergy.
Yuck.
So all we're saying here is, you know, make your own, get the good organic raw milk, have a good organic yogurt the way nature intended, and you've got a superfood. If it's got a label and been shipped into the grocery store, it's a waste product and really not fit.
Right. I have a question from chat from the audience. Is there a relationship between enzymes and digestive bacteria?
There really are. The bacteria themselves can make enzymes, and they work on their process of whether it's fermentation and chewing up and digesting the food as well. The proteolytic enzymes are the ones that fall in the category of hydrolytic, meaning they're activated with water, they actually can weaken some of the bonds in a pathogenic biofilm. So in understanding that, when the bacteria are in the GI tract, if they're sensing that there's a lot of guys trying to attack them, they build a fort. And they will build this out of our nutrients, the polysaccharides, some of the fats and proteins. And they'll build this biofilm or a dome around them, and then they conduct their business. It's an interesting thing that the pathogenic bacteria build biofilms, and they often incorporate a heavy metal, such as mercury, or even iron or magnesium. Magnesium is not a heavy metal, but they have genetic intelligence, and they'll use different minerals. And I think they're kind of like nuclear reactors. They become kind of an energy source, and they can also take other bacteria prisoner and put them to work inside the biofilm. But then you might say that pneumonia-type bacteria, they're hiding. And in that candy-coated shell around them, they're hiding from the immune system, and they're hiding from the species that would hunt them. And so these become bad. Now, they do that. The other thing is that they will do this in the presence of antibiotics. It's called quorum sensing. And one bacteria will sample that antibiotic, and it will die. But before it passes the message on to the other cells in the biofilm, hey, here's the blueprint. You need to mutate in this way in order to beat this antibiotic. So a lot of the credit that antibiotics get are only against planktonic forms, free-swimming bacteria. And it drives them into biofilms where they change their expression, their structures, their RNA, DNA, and now they're no longer so virulent. Maybe now that biofilm is not producing a waste product that's aggravating the immune system. So the inflammation goes down, the person is declared well, the carnage of the antibiotic has wiped out all the migrating planktonic forms, and now you've got that pneumonia tucked away in a biofilm in your lungs or in your gut. And what is it going to do? It's going to hang there for years, and it's just waiting for you to get your feet wet, to get caught in the rain in the winter, to have a severe emotional setback, a deep grief, a trip to the hospital for the traumas of surgeries. And that's when they come out again, and they'll realize now that they can renew their quest to own the world. So this is a process, and the enzymes can start to weaken some of those pathogenic biofilms. And once they're out of the way, we like to encourage the communities of good guys. And so you can literally replace pathogenic biofilms with probiotic biofilms, and then you have a seeding ground. Because when they get to overpopulation inside their dome, they go out and migrate to other areas. They don't sit and suffer in overpopulation. And so they're constantly looking to expand. And so you get your good guys, if the terrain is right, they'll keep expanding and bringing more blessings. So there you go. Enzymes, they can be made by bacteria. They're used by bacteria. Some will break down biofilm. The good species in our stomachs, in our duodenal stomach, in our small intestines, and even large intestines, they have learned to accommodate our digestive enzymes. So it's not like if you take a digestive enzyme, amylase, protease, cellulase, and that type of thing, you're not launching a direct attack on your good bacteria. They already know how to work with it. And this is the blessing of herbal medicine, because these bacterial species, if they're part of our good guys, they know how to adapt to some oregano, to some garlic, to dill, to thyme, to rosemary, you know, parsley, sage, and, you know, everything you would get at the Scarborough Fair Market. All of these are antibiotics. The spices are antimicrobials, but our good guys, they're all used to them. And so we have a symbiotic and synergistic relationship, and the bad guys are susceptible to them, or else the bad guys would have taken over. See, so while the bad guys can learn to build biofilms and be immune, it's part of the spices that we eat in our normal diet that's supposed to help us maintain the balance in our gut and kind of keep being oppressive to bad species thinking they want to hang around. But the good species aren't riled up in the short run. You can eventually kill good species with the herbs if they're taken for too long. Mm-hmm. But nature grew up that way, giving a huge competitive advantage to botanical processes for maintaining the gut. This is why in natural health there might be a phase of a pathogen purge where a person might use a variety of botanical agents to knock out the bad guys before they can harm the good guys. And as they knock out the bad guys, the good guys can proliferate and take over a little more. And then through our diet and thoughts and everything else, we should be focusing on the quality of the terrain, and then we maintain with the good guys being at least 85% of the gut microbiome, which refers to, the word microbiome simply refers to all the RNA, DNA in and on and about the human body. And when we talk about the gut microbiome, it's all the DNA, RNA, that's in all the species, virus included. They're all part of now what's called the human genome. And that's the profound impact. I really think that's what woke me up. When you asked that question earlier, it was the discovery of the human genome after some 12, 14 years of global computer crunching to get the gene sequences of a human being, and then finding out that there's so much interplay at the atomic, at the genetic, at the molecular level between these kingdoms and species that science officially said about the time that they decided that Pluto was no longer in the country club of planets in our solar system, and science told us we can't call Pluto a planet. They now also have demanded that all of these microbes, all of their DNA and RNA comprises what is now called the human genome. These guys are part of us. They're a big part of us. So if we want to treat ourselves nicely, we need to support and care for our microbiomes, starting in this case with the gut.
Right. And which, now we're going to jump the shark slightly here, because I want to, this all leads to the sarcopenia or the age-related muscle loss, which I'm really fascinated by. I mean, everything you've said is always, you know, the way you tie things together is always incredible. And now I'd like us to move to talking about the age-related muscle loss, because it seems like the precursor to getting to the sarcopenia is everything that you've said. In other words, we've done all this stuff for the first, let's say, 50 years, that we've had a mismatch of, you know, possible antibiotics and exposure to whatever and this and that. And, you know, we've set up our gut microbiome to be kind of okay, but maybe not great. And we get to this age where we start to lose muscle, we have muscle loss. How do we, can we save our butts? I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but I can't help myself. How do we do that? How do we get back into having a vital, you know, health for our next 30 or 40 years or 50 years?
The issue is that, you know, science really is leading the way, but scientists and those hiring the studies do not have the natural health principles to understand the results of the science. And so without a foundation in the historic holistic natural health principles, our science becomes very, like they said, the horse with blinders on, the little flaps that they put around the horse's eyes so it can only see a little bit straight ahead. And so our science today has blinders because they don't know the natural principles, that within everybody's life there's a innate vitality that's intelligent, and that we have a force within our bodies that's always looking to heal, repair, have the most optimal health possible. And then we come in dictatorially and decide we think we know what's best, and we implement our procedures that way. Well, here's the thing. It came out of the gut microbiome. Like you're saying, number one, the gut microbiome is your set point of inflammation. Well, if you have inflammation turned up, you have different cellular membrane activities. You have the immune system that can interfere. And so the higher the inflammation in a body, the harder it is to really build good quality muscle tissue. The thing about the gut microbiome is muscle exercise sends components back to the gut microbiome, you know, whether this comes through the gallbladder and the liver being discarded into the small intestine, whether it comes through the blood supply, but they affect the length of the microvilli in your gut, which is synonymous with how much nutrition can you absorb. What is your transit time of your food moving through your body? The muscles in the gut are actually have an impact on the composition, the biodiversity of the gut microbiome, and the microvilli performance is all about getting the nutrients into the body that your muscles need to be strong. And in the midst of it all are signaling molecules that can come from the gut microbiome that help repair, help activate the anabolic muscle building. So if we start looking at the gut as a hub and applying the wisdom that science is putting forth without being able to apply it themselves, the wisdom of this is now we can then go off on the tangents, which Dr. McBride did with the gut-brain connection, the brain-gut connection, and she set up the GAPS diet, and we have people now talking about the gut-thyroid connection. Well, I looked at this and said, oh my goodness, there's a gut-muscle connection. In looking at muscles, probably like you, I have to admit a flaw. While I've dedicated a lot of my life to optimal health, I was a guy that could get away with being a little sedentary. My nutrition is so great that I never got the big wake-up call. But typically, I've been a man that I can handle for years. Since I was 16, I can pick up a 100-pound bag of something and toss it on my shoulder and walk away. In the old days, I was working at a plant nursery, and it was, you know, fertilizer bags. I had some guys unloading some tiles. Oh, we had to do a renovation in our home, and he said, oh, no, you can't carry this, sir. It's 100 pounds, and I'm going to the guys in the truck, and I'm going, 100 pounds, watch this old guy. I'm 66 years old. So I picked up this 100 pounds, and it started shifting on me, and I kept pulling muscle against it to be upright, and I ended up falling over in the front yard, much to the amusement of the guys on the truck. Secondly, I like shooting archery. It's a little bit of a meditation for me. And my bow is a 70-pound draw. But you only have to draw it a little ways, you know, and then compoundly it reduces by two-thirds. But you got to have the oomph and the muscles to stretch a string that's resisting at 70 pounds. Well, I went out with my bow after a hiatus of working with, and I couldn't pull it back. And I said, you know, this is nature's wake-up call. I am no longer the strength of a person I used to be. And I'm sorry to say, my life is sitting and consulting with people. My life is sitting on the computer as an author of 16 books. My nose has been in the computer. My bum is on the airplane traveling. And so when I really took a test on myself, I was horrified. A human being should not sit more than 3 hours a day. And I was up around 12. And, you know, so when I read articles that say muscle loss is the new smoking. In fact, there's a research study from Europe that says if you smoke cigarettes and you exercise, you will actually be healthier than a person who doesn't smoke and doesn't exercise. Exercise, a lack of it, is the new smoking, and it puts us running headlong into the diseases of Alzheimer's, diabetes, of course, joint and muscle breakdown. But our muscles, we ought to think about them this way. Are they not really the body's largest collective organ system? You know, it's always been the debate. The skin's the largest, the liver's the most important. I know that some of the guys down in Texas will argue for another organ, but the point is that the muscles, now what's so important, they're not just providing structure and mobility, because they're engines burning glucose, they're engines burning fat, and their metabolic products go into the bloodstream, go back to the gut microbiome, go to the brain. And when the body knows that it's getting good exercise, it has a different array of beneficial bacteria in the gut, because the body will lean its terrain toward the species that we're going to provide the amino acids that activate what's called the mTOR system, the mechanistic target of rapamycin, which is how the muscles rebuild, activate satellite cells, which is your like stem cells. And so we find this powerful relationship between the gut and the muscles, but we find the relationship, a similar dotted line of internet connectivity of computers everywhere. The computers of the muscles are interlinked with the brain, the gut, the whole shebang. And so, you know, sometimes I felt in clinical practice that why is this person being so resistant to re-enlivening their thyroid? Or why is this person continuously having adrenal stress? And then I find out the person is extremely sedentary. And I'm thinking it's another missing link. It's another piece of the gestalt of the holistic model that if you're not getting your minimum exercise, you cannot be healthy. And I had to live it and immediately dig into the research. So now after 3 years, and I have a chiropractor as a partner in this endeavor, we're making the videos and the printouts and the whole position on this subject, because loud and clear, age-related muscle loss does not have to happen in your lifetime. There are studies now, 90-year-old people, a lot of times they've gone to athletes and people that have been more dedicated than the average person to their body, to their nutrition, to their level of exercise. But the blueprint is there, that if we have the right nutrition and we have the right exercises, that we can maintain. So I want you to know that I did a little 9-week program on myself, and it's the rudiments that Dr. Ben Anderson and I were putting together for this program for reversing sarcopenia. And literally within that 9 weeks, I'm pulling the 70-pound bow, I'm lifting 100-pound packages again, and look a lot better, you know, fill out the top half of a shirt instead of the bottom half. And, you know, can just really see the coming alive, that our bodies are just begging for the right type of exercise. And then, you know, people seem to fall there in two camps. People that love exercise, they're going to have a spa membership or, a fitness center, and they love that whole thing. And that's not so much who I'm interested in this program, but the person that's going to flop down when they come home from work, martini in the left hand and some popcorn in the right, and they're going to veg out on the TV. I think the statistics on sitting and watching TV in this country are beyond belief of people like 8 hours a day on average. So we know we have a lot of old people that sit around in retirement homes and all they do is watch TV. We have children now that are watching, TV literally 6 and 7 hours a day. And so no comment on the TV, but it's a sedentary lifestyle. So for me, being a researcher, having to read, sitting on the duff, counseling all day on the duff, deciding to relax and being on the duff, I realized life had gone wrong. And my wake-up call was less ability to do the things that I'm going to want to love to do. I'm going to want to be out hiking the 15-mile trail. I'm going to want to be riding the bicycle with the grandkids. And so this is the promise. from science now, you do not have to lose your muscle. But then the question is, well, how much do I have to work out every day to try to stem the tide of age-related muscle loss, which everybody's taking for granted now? That's the alarm. Don't buy into it. And here's what we found. We found 28 minutes of focused breathing, exercise, the stretching, the resistance, that alone will stay the course. And so now in the world we're getting, there's been several years now of pitching the burst training or the interval training, because science is telling us that's where you get mitochondrial biogenesis. That's where you literally build energy and you can reverse diabetes, and this research is coming out. But most people are not ready. You know, if a person walks now in a sedentary life, and maybe they're slewing their right foot out to the side when they walk, you know, and they get a little waddle, if they jump into a burst training, that's how they're going to run. And they're going to reinforce what's wrong with their tendons and the ligaments with their hip flexors and their joints. And so people need to get ready for the benefits of the high-intensity 2 minutes of exercise that science also tells us we only need one time a week to maintain. So a person, if they got on the treadmill and ran full out for 2 minutes rest and do that four times, they're done for the week to get the benefits of interval burst training. But there's still the stretchings and the rollings and the breathings and things. When we look at the very glorious yoga tradition and how they maintain such marvelous muscle fitness and balance because of the exercises, we have to have respect for stretching. So anyway, the 28-minute-a-day program that we have designed and we're doing, it is sufficient to reverse. So people that now might only be lifting, you know, let's say they can lift a 40-pound bag, and after that, you know, they're looking for somebody else to help. And so they will soon find, literally within 9 weeks or so, that they can be lifting 60 pounds. Their muscles are more defined. But as those muscles get bigger and prettier, they're burning more sugars out of our body. Now we don't run headlong into the diabetes diastasis. And these muscle engines are sending signals to the brain that, like the gut microbiome, can dispel anxieties and depressions. And suddenly we find that if we've given up muscle, that's probably one of the top indicators that we have taken a fairly large stride toward disease and death, that the loss of muscle is one of your chief indications that your metabolic systems are not going to be able to thwart cancers, tumor growth, this type of thing, that when the muscles are more active, there's compounds put into the blood as well as signal molecules and direct nerve communications with the brain that amp up that cellular apoptosis that will crush a potential rogue cell and to keep us healthy. So that's pretty much the methods. Once I realized, okay, I've gone 64 years, now I'm in my 67th. I said, I've gone this long in my life literally hating exercise because it just seems like such a waste of time. Am I really going to give a 30 minutes of my life on a treadmill when I could write another chapter in a book or something? You see, so it's a life orientation, but I had to get the slap in the face, the reality check. I had to get the guys on the back of the truck thinking, you know, what a doofus. You know, who does this old guy think he is, this old bald guy? You know, what's he doing flopping over in his front yard trying to carry 100 pounds of, you know, marble?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I decided I want it back. I think there's basic requirements of the body. I mean, a human being should be able to do, you know, 10 or 20 push-ups, should be able to chin your cells. I mean, just look how many times you're hanging off of a wire at 1,000 feet elevation, and you need to pull yourself up. You know, there's a certain basic functionality that I want, so when somebody says, let's go camping, let's go hiking, let's go bike riding, let's go, I'm embarrassed to admit I'm not a golf player, but let's go play golf, let's go play tennis, let's toss the old pigskin around with the grandkids, you know, let's get out and have some adventure in life, that this is the joy of going into the older years, that you feel good, your mind is sharp, and by golly, you've got the muscle power you had when you were 30. And so, not a pie in the sky. Science is now showing us by the metabolic processes and with studies. Like I said, unfortunately, a lot of the studies have been with athletes, and if you and I are not athletes, then sometimes we can be intimidated that, well, that athlete spent 8 hours a day in training. You know, I've got other things to do in life. That's why nature is so brilliant. My job was to discover the minimum requirement, because nature's on a bell curve. And if you can live within that sweet spot of the bell curve at the top, whether it's 28 minutes or whether it's 58 minutes in a day, that if you're somewhere in that sweet spot, you can maintain, be healthy, put on muscle mass, look good, feel good, and, you know, you don't even have to be, you know, taking hormone shots and these kind of shortcuts, stem cell shots and things like this in order to do it. It's all innate within our bodies. And so I'd say right now what we're getting ready to do is we're getting ready to put out what's called the beta test on this, and that means we're going to get some people together to go through the program, and then with the promise that if indeed it's true and they love it, that they will write a nice endorsement or something, and then we can release this program to all baby boomers. In fact, our target is anybody really over 38 years old. If you learn to do with quality what we're designing, then not only is that pretty much all you need, other than you want to use your muscles then to enjoy life, so go for a walk with your, you know, your loved ones, or, you know, hop a bicycle and that type of thing, which is part of an active lifestyle. That's what we found, 28 minutes of doing the right kind of exercise and doing them sequentially, that now we have a plan that can be taught and that people can just do it for the rest of their lives. In fact, a lot of it can even be done sitting on an airplane. So now we have a way to support our bodies in the fact that we are sitting in a car to go anywhere, sitting on a plane, sitting in theaters, you know, sitting when we visit with people. So much of our process is ingrained to sit. And so I started looking at the ability to sit only 3 hours a day at the most. And you have to start counting the time at the food table and how much of relaxing and chatting in the evening and that type of thing. I'm amazed at how many times now that I have to rise to my feet and get out and go pull a weed in the garden or check something, you know, hey, let me go to the mailbox. Whatever we can do in our lives today, park further from the gate, park further from the grocery store entrance. You know, there's little things. Take the stairs when going in an office building. There's things now that I'm incorporating that are literally tripling my activity level. And now I'm running with more grace and ease. I can bend over and reach for the floor, that kind of thing, that really comes with having the good muscles. And that's the promise then, is that even at 80 and 90, our skin might be wrinkled from sun damage and free radicals, and our heads might be bald. In my case, that's been a 30-year phenomenon. But what we find then is that even though our chronological age in the latter years, of course, is getting into the big numbers, our biological age inside is young and vibrant, and our muscles are strong. That means we're not candidates for accidents, which take a large toll on life, the elderly people falling and things like that. They can't move out of the street quick enough, and here comes the truck. You know, for whatever reason, our survival, our mobility, our ability to get in and out of a car, our ability to walk those extra blocks with a smile on our face when we do that, all of these things start coming back into the fullness of our lives. And so this whole conversation is really about enjoying the so-called golden years as a time when you're the wisest you'll ever be, other than the minute you were born, but you've gained the wisdom of hacking it through life, what works and what doesn't, and your keen insights, and hopefully your patience and some forbearance, and all of these things that make a person full and rich in their mental and emotional terrain. Now, we've got to keep our bodies going because there's so many wonderful opportunities to, you know, go photograph a lion or go hike the Milford Track in New Zealand.
To really, you know, like you say, to take everything that we've learned all this time and continue to enjoy it is, a wonderful concept. I have to move us to a close, and I have people in chat asking me about how do they find out more about this. I know you have a long link, which we will get from you and turn into a short link, and I'll put in the show notes. For now, is the best place for people to go is sign up for your newsletter at wellnesswiz.com, and that's with one Z.
You know, if they do that, there's an article there, I think, called From the Duff to the Buff Zone or something, and it talks a little bit about this. I'm going to have to say right now that because of that long link, and my internet guy trying to put it together, he put together a beautiful more information page on the internet, and I'll send you that link. I'm going to say for people that really want to get tuned in on this, that might like to be part of the beta test, which will have the most favorable, you know, financial arrangement and hands-on assistance, then I'm going to say, do you mind if they just call my office? And
sure.
I think we'll take care of them as voice. And then if you post the link, we can have that there, and people can just sign up that way. But the
okay,
the
and
office,
if you'll give because for the people listening only, if you'll give out your office phone number, that'd be great.
It's 512-328-3996.
Okay,
I guess
and I'll put
that
in the show notes.
1-2-3-2-8-3-9-9-6, and we'll just shake hands by voice and go that route, and I'll send you a link to the sign up page. We're probably going to launch this in early August, late July. That we'll get the first program pushed out so we can learn that it's very, very user friendly, simple, and you know, take all the input that we can get in order to make it truly noteworthy.
Great. Okay. That was a great, I knew this was going to be a roller coaster ride, and it was a great ride. Thank you so much, Dr. Jack. All right, Sherry, any closing thoughts? I know you're off to teach a class, so I bet you're off and running.
It's pizza class.
My mind is spinning with what we ought to do, and we ought to have him back so he can say what are our options.
There will be a part two, I can tell, or actually in this case a part three. So with that, I will say to everybody, have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.